live. Yeah, yeah, we going live. Hey, hey, we going live. Yeah, yeah, we going live. Yeah, yeah, we going. Yeah, 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 we going. Yeah, 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 we going live. From the 50-yard line, we going live. From the 50-yard line, we going live.
Hello, beautiful people.
Hello, hello, hello.
I am Jared, the football genius Burgess.
And I am Stephanie Fitzpatrick, aka the Advantage Coach.
And this is episode 143 of the Field to the Real podcast.
Yes, yes.
Well, I could have saved this for the end of the show, but
It's bittersweet.
So. This will be the last time that you see me. Until episode 150. I will be gone for 6 weeks, but as you guys can see the last couple of weeks, Stephanie has been taking the reins of this thing, so she will be you're gonna be all right. I look, after going through and editing and seeing all this stuff, I'm like, she got this.
Sure.
But let's dive into who's really right. Because I think that I'm anxious to talk about this, and I'm anxious to talk about my disdain about why we have this matchup in the first place.
I'm happy because we do who's really rights all the time, but rarely do we have them where it's going to be almost an immediate result. Right. This is great. So if you all are listening, and you want to put your opinion in, you got to do it before Monday night. So our who's really right?
Yes.
Is Georgia v. Alabama rematch. Who wins?
I step. Ladies first.
Okay. I'm going to let you have that this time since this is the last time you get to say for a while. I don't know who would even think I wasn't going to say Georgia, but I'm just going to say, I feel like, and it's not because I'm from Georgia, I'm a UGA fan, alum, none of that. It is really, it's not that. I feel like I am having optimism, I'm going to say that Georgia is sick of being in this space of like Alabama owning them. The way that they played last week in their bowl game, and I mean in their playoff game.
Yeah.
Was angry.
Yeah.
With a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
And what it reminds me of is I remember earlier in the season, because it was a while at the beginning of the season, like nobody was scoring touchdowns on them, like in the first quarter, half, something like that. Mm-hmm. And when it happened for the first time, I believe they were playing Auburn. And I could just see the smoke coming out of their ears for allowing that to happen. And the way that they came back after that and shut them down, like, no, we need to let y'all know who we are. And so I'm feeling like, because they went into that SEC championship, in my opinion, with almost a cockiness at how they had played. And they felt like, well, they've lost the game. We haven't. Our defense has been shut down all season. They're not that, you know, prolific as they have been in the past. Like, I think they had talked themselves into believing that they were in a better space and that they would just, it wouldn't be a big deal and they'd be able to win. And I feel like now you're the underdog coming into this game. And how dare we be the underdog? When, if we're real and honest about this, they have the better team. So I feel like Kirby, put your big boy pants on Get over your enamorate, your whatever you feel, your man crush with your former boss, and put your foot on his neck and go out and play football. Georgia football. That's my passionate plea.
Yeah.
But I do feel like they're going to go in with that kind of attitude. And so I feel like we'll have a different result than we've seen in every other game they play up till now.
Steph, I have to tell you that there's nothing more that I want than for everything that you said to be correct. There is nothing more than I want. But I was looking at one of my favorite movies the other day.
Oh, gosh.
And if you guys get a chance to go check out Gladiator, I believe it's on Netflix. And the first scene of Gladiator, you see these barbarians, and they're coming out to face the Roman army. And one of the barbarians is holding a severed head. And
what?
I know, he tosses in the dirt. And so the second in command to Maximus Decimus Meridius walks up to him and says, people should know when they're conquered. And I see Bryce Young. I see Bryce Young walking up to Nick Saban and saying the exact same thing. Because the reality is, what you said to Kirby Smart at the end of your passionate plea, that he needs to put his big boy pants on, I just don't think he can. Not against Nick Saban. And I think that seeing the SEC championship game allowed me to actually go ahead and swallow that pill. Nick Saban's disciples just can't beat him. And I do know that Jimbo Fisher did it.
I was about to say it just happened.
But it's very rare. And a game of this magnitude with these stakes, I just don't think it's going to happen. If there were ever a time for them to do it, it was the year that they won the SEC championship and that they played in the national championship in Atlanta. In Atlanta. This game will be in Indianapolis.
Yeah. Maybe that's what they need.
That was their time to do it. They were clearly far and away the better team.
Yeah.
And they just could not get it done. And while I do agree with you that Georgia is the better team, Alabama's just better coached.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah.
Take that uppercut.
I hate that I have to say it. I want nothing other than for Nick Saban to eat crow and for his team to go down to defeat. I want nothing other than that. But I just do not see it happening. Shout out to my bro, Derek, because I picked last week's games with my heart. I said that Alabama was going to lose to Cincinnati.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I knew better than that.
Yeah.
And I said that Michigan.
I did win those at least.
Yeah. I said that Michigan was going to beat Georgia, and they were clearly in a different class. And so right before the game came on, Derek was texting me and my boy DC and my boy Twan, and he was just like, Georgia's, this game isn't even going to be close. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Michigan has the number one offense, the number one rushing attack and all of that. He's like, all right, we'll see.
Yeah,
and
that was, yeah.
He texted me throughout that entire game.
I'm sure.
He called me. And I'm going to say publicly, I ignored you, brother. Because I was annoyed that we were losing so bad. So he called.
Listen, if nothing else last week in those playoff games, it proved my point of what we talked about last week, which was those two teams represent, when I say SEC football is grown men versus everybody else, That was a display from the top two teams in the SEC of what that looks like. It wasn't even worth watching. I was like, this is awful. What is
this? Yeah.
But see, Jim Harbaugh should have kept his mouth shut. Again, Nick Saban, notice that Nick Saban doesn't talk trash.
Mm-mm.
He's always very political, very PC about everything. Oh, right?
Nick Saban, Bill Belichick.
So Jim Harbaugh making that statement about just play like Alabama and we'll beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so they teed off on you like you were Alabama. That's another thing. Well, oh, okay. Play like Alabama. See what that gets you.
In fairness, I think that because if we're looking at coaches, and we can talk about Nick Saban being the great coach that he is.
Yeah.
The one thing that he wasn't able to do is be successful in the NFL.
No.
Jim Harbaugh has been able to be both. And so even if you say like Jim Harbaugh hasn't won the national championship or, you know, I can see that. But if you look at Michigan before Jim Harbaugh got there, they were winning 6 and 7 games.
Yeah.
He's won no less than 10 games since he's been there. And as you can see, and it kind of speaks to your point, going back to the point that you made about SEC football. And to my point, more so the top part of SEC football being one Alabama and then whoever else decides to step up that year, this year being Georgia.
Yeah.
They're just head shoulders above everybody, and you're not going to be able to recruit the way that they are. And so I like the way that Jim Harbaugh is as a coach. It's sour grapes whenever you do something like this and you don't win. But I think what he's seen, and I think that there's some rumblings of this up in Ann Arbor, is that he's probably just going to either need to go take one of those big-time SEC jobs, kind of like what's his name from Notre Dame did?
LSU. Yep. Brian Kelly.
Yeah, Brian Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's going to have to go back to the NFL.
Okay.
He's just not going to get the type of kid that can be
talent, isn't
Alabama or Georgia.
The talent. No. He's just not going to recruit the talent that he needs to.
Right. Because between Ohio State and Michigan, they're soaking up all of, to themselves, are soaking up all of that Midwest talent.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
They aren't even able to go cherry pick from SEC country.
No.
You know, and I know I'm totally off topic here. No, I'm sorry. Fine. But I that's kind of my thing for Jim Harbaugh. Because when I saw that too, I was like, ugh. Because I didn't see it until after you said it. I didn't see that pregame.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually the first time he's ever been interviewed pregame since he's been at Michigan.
He should have just kept
somebody should have coached you on that.
Yeah, don't do that. That's not the way it is. So but y'all let us know who you think's really right. Is Georgia gonna win college football championship, or is Alabama going to win the college football championship? Go dog.
Roll Tide.
Oh, I can't believe you let that come out your mouth.
I think I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
I bet you did. Like, real talk. Like, But y'all let us know who's really right. All right. So let's get to topics.
Yes.
Ooh, so just pre-warning y'all, be prepared today.
Yeah.
Because we got a juicy one coming up. But we're going to start with my favorite, Steph Curry.
Yes.
Yet again, this week, breaking a record, his own, in fact. Of 158 straight games with at least one three-pointer. His former record was obviously 157, and he set that back in 2016.
Yeah.
So that all in itself speaks volumes. Like, you 6 years out, and you still draining them like this,
mm-hmm.
that's speaking.
Knocking out at least one.
At least one. And we know it's never just one.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen Steph Curry score just one three-pointer in a game. I have to go look at that. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Me, I don't think so either.
So, yeah. So, what you think about this?
I think it just continues to speak to his level of greatness and him being the greatest shooter of all time. I know that it's hard for, like, the older folks to kind of pass those torches because with something like this that is quantifiable and that we can see, like, there is a debate because people are debating it. But if you look at the numbers, Steph Curry is the best shooter of all time.
Yeah.
Like that can't be debated based off of the statistics.
Yeah.
But some people are going to say that they prefer someone like a Ray Allen or someone like a Reggie Miller.
Yeah.
And that Steph Curry's records are a product of just where the game has gone.
Yeah.
But even if that's the case, it's called natural evolution, and that's just what happens. And so at some point, no time that I can see in the near future, but at some point, someone's going to come along and they're going to possibly break Steph Curry's records.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but
I look forward to hopefully still having my sight and being able to see that app.
Right.
Because, Lord, that'll be amazing. But
yeah.
I just told you before we started the show that Al Harrington was on this last episode of I Am Athlete. Mm-hmm. They touched on this. And of course, his view, you said it, you right on it with what you said, mm-hmm. like in his mind, he was debating it from the standpoint that Reggie Miller didn't have as many opportunities because of the way the game was played. And Reggie not being somebody who could create his own shot. It was always the ball had to pass through several hands and then get to him for him to get a shot off. And so he talked about it from the standpoint of how many attempts.
Yeah.
And opportunities that Steph Curry has had to shoot the three versus what they did in the past. And right. So I respect that. I get it. But I feel like it was funny. Auntie said on there, they brought up the whole, if she brought up this is off subject, but I'll bring it back. She said, if LeBron played back in the day of MJ, would he have been better than an MJ playing in today?
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because if Steph Curry was Steph Curry,
mm-hmm.
back in the day of Ray Allen or Reggie Miller,
mm-hmm.
I still feel like he would have been the best shooter because of what Al Harrington said. He could create his own shot.
Right. Well, I don't think those guys were allowed to exist back then.
Exactly.
I think that that's a new thing where players were, we were taking what I guess in the past they would have considered a two guard and allowing him to handle the ball consistently.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen. You're back in the day point guards.
Point guard, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Who the offense ran through, those guys handled the ball a lot and they set up the offense. Yeah. Now you have players like Steph Curry who are the point guards.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring the ball up the court, and if they want to take a shot, they just throw up the shot. You know right. what I'm saying? And so,
and it's different because everybody's able to handle the ball now,
right? Because Draymond sets up the offense a lot.
Everybody's able to actually handle the ball, so
mm-hmm.
it's a little different. But I mean, I just thought it was interesting that she put that out there, and I was like, yeah, because you know, debate was still who's the GOAT between MJ and LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And I love Auntie's take. She always says it, that LeBron is the, what does she say? She has a great saying. Steph's the best shooter. MJ's the best all around. And LeBron is like the best. I cannot remember what she says, but she has a really good, the way she, because she's a former WNBA player, she has a better eye than like the rest of them might have about what she's talking. So I respect what she's saying and how she sees them in the game. So I have to go back and find it, but she puts it perfectly. So it's no one's better than the other. It's just they're good at what they do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that's Steph. You know how I feel about Steph. So.
Yeah, shout out to Steph.
Congratulations, sir.
Reach out to us, bro.
So, all right, here's the money shot today, y'all.
This one's gonna take us.
So just sit back, chill out, get you something to drink, popcorn, because this one's gonna be a minute.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
For anybody who's either not a sports fan or you've been under a rock, perhaps, for the last week or so. Sunday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. I can't remember what quarter it was. Was it third? I remember sitting third quarter. I'm sitting there, I'm watching the game because you all know that I live in Florida in the Tampa Bay viewing area. So, of course, those are the games that I get to see. Happy, happy, joy, joy. Tampa Bay is playing, and third quarter, just out of the blue, you hear they blow the whistle, stop play. And it's like, well, nobody called a timeout. You hear the commentators because they're confused, like, what's happening? And then you see the camera go to Antonio Brown. And at this point, he has taken his shirt off and is pulling his gloves off, throwing all of this into the stands. They're in New York, right? Weren't they playing the Jets?
Yes, it was in New York.
New York playing. And so he had taken his pads and his jersey off. And at this point, what we see is he's taking this off and he proceeds in the middle of the game to run across the end zone to leave the field. As he does all this, letting the fans know, bye, I'm leaving, blah, blah, blah. At the moment this happened, I was confused. But the commentators were very, what is the word that I want to use? Condescending?
Yeah.
Judgmental, using words, saying things like, this is the most unprofessional thing I've ever seen. How can he do this? I've never seen anything like this. He's done. This is da 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 da. This, they gave him a shot. Like, it was all of that. Of course, this went viral immediately, and people had their own opinions. The first version of what they thought occurred was he was angry because he was like, he had three incentives on the line that pretty much would have given him $1 million.
Right.
So that was the first thought. He's mad because he's not in the game and he's gonna not get his $1 million.
Right.
That was the first one. Second thing comes out, maybe, what was that, Wednesday?
Tuesday,
about him being injured.
Yeah.
And the preceding 2 days, he had pretty much attempted to validate his point by showing text messages and other things to kind of let people know, no, I really was hurt. I am hurt, and that's why I didn't want to go back into the game. And the Bucks have rebutted all of this with, it wasn't that he was hurt, because his insinuations look bad for the Bucks. That they wanted him, he says his ankle, he got like bone spurs that are literally in his ankle. Just talk about throw up in your mouth. Bone spurs that are in his ankle. And so they hurt really bad. And so he said they had shot him up with something really strong. And by this time, it's third quarter, and he just could not go anymore. That was his take. And that they were trying, that Bruce Arians was trying to force him allegedly to go into the game anyway. And him telling him no, he told him to get out. So they come back and said they didn't know he was hurt. They had no knowledge of him being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I think, I mixed it up. That's when he came out with the proof, like, these like, are the text
messages. Yeah, I knew I was hurt. Yeah.
This is the text messages with you, coach. Not some random person who might not have told you. This was me and you. Mm-hmm. And the latest is back to, it's about money. That was the last thing the Bucks came back out and said. This was just him angry again about his incentive. Well, he came out again, right?
Well, so
rebut to that.
Yesterday, what it was is, and they put out the money thing to kind of prove their point. But yesterday, what it was is that no, we did know of AB's ankle injury.
Now you want to
prior. Prior, they knew of AB's ankle injury, but he did get shot up before the game. But during the game, he didn't go to the trainers and say, hey, my ankle's injured in the way that you would have to do it for protocol's sake. Mm-hmm. So when Bruce Arians came back to say something to him about the ankle or about going into the game, he didn't have the prior knowledge of, hey,
being hurt.
I'm injured from the athletic training staff, because usually what happens is you go over to the trainers, you say, hey, they look at your ankle, like, what's going on with that? You feeling some pain, this, that, and the third? And then they go and relate that information to the head coach, and then they say that you're out, or like that they're going to try to work on it, see if you can come back in,
right?
Any of that. AB didn't do all of that. And so the story that came out yesterday, and I actually kind of believe this one.
Mm-hmm.
The full picture coming together makes sense to me now. They say that AB at halftime was irate because he wasn't getting the amount of targets that he had gotten the week before.
Mm-hmm.
Usually he's at about 6 targets by halftime. I think he was somewhere around 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so he only had a couple catches. And so he was upset. And so they say that he kind of flipped on Tom Brady and was like, oh, you going back to your boy Gronk now.
Mm.
And when he came out at halftime, he made the decision, well, since y'all not going to throw me the ball, I'm out. My ankle hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't go to the trainers. And that's mm-hmm. how it gets into Bruce Arians' hand when he comes back and says, like, hey, we just called you, you know, your grouping, like,
right?
Why are you not going out there?
Right, right.
And so this is what Bruce Arians says. Bruce Arians says that AB's response is, I mean, y'all ain't throwing me the ball no way, so I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bruce Arians' response is, oh, well, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he throws them out.
Okay.
That story right there to me is plausible.
Okay.
Given his blowups in Pittsburgh and what we see with him, you know, kicking over the Gatorade mm-hmm. thing and going at Ben and saying like, hey, you're not getting me enough targets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that he'll just quit on his team, but I do think that he'll get upset about the amount of balls that's getting thrown his way, especially seeing as Chris Godwin just went out with an injury a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And it's like, hey, I'm supposed to be the guy now. You're not giving me the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so this story, out of all of the stories that I've heard, makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. Because he blew up y'all whole money thing, too.
Yeah.
Because your agent said they already had agreed to give him the money, so it didn't matter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, and that was the thing, that the money thing that you were talking about is that he had $2 million worth of incentives that was left on his contract for the rest of the year. He said that he went to the organization to ask them, could that money just be guaranteed as opposed to him having to hit those benchmarks to get it?
Mm-hmm.
yesterday when that came out, the organization said that they told him no, that he would have to hit those benchmarks.
Mm, okay. Well, maybe that's what I missed. But I thought they had said yes. They had agreed to the guarantee. Mm-hmm. But maybe I missed
okay.
it. Yeah. But either way, y'all see this is all a big old messy mess, right?
Yeah.
This is a big old messy mess. And I agree with one thing that the commentator said. It was unprofessional.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, the part that it was unprofessional, the way you handled all of this from, if we're just going to assume that the story that you just told, which is, seems to be the most plausible, is what happened.
Yeah.
From the locker room on through seems very unprofessional. But I'll tell you one thing that I find weird about the part about him blowing up at Tom in the locker room and him acting the way that we have seen him act in the past is I vividly remember seeing this before the start of the half.
Mm-hmm.
He was sitting on the bench. I don't know who was sitting next to him. Tom Brady walked past. He stopped. He looked at him. It was like he said, "You ready?" I read AB's lips and said, "I got you.
Oh, he said, "I got you." Okay.
I got you.
Yeah.
So I'm just, I don't know what to believe.
And that's the hard part. And that's the thing. I said that I was in the, you know, my group chat. I was in the group chat talking about this. And, you know, when it first came out, you know, I thought it was like, yo, like, what's going on with him for him to do something like that? And so instead of like kind of, you know, piling on like the rest of the people were doing, there was a bit of compassion that I felt for, like, yo, okay, like, it's all right, it's cool to troll them and I get it, like, all right, like, AB being AB again, but like, something's wrong and we need to get this dude some help. And then when the next story came out about, like, you know, he just wouldn't go back in the game and they didn't talk anything about the ankle injury and anything like that, it's like, all right, this feels incomplete, but like what's going on here? And then when AB side, what he said came out with the text messages and stuff like that, I'm like, yo, are they trying to use his past against him in order for them to get off something shady? Mm-hmm. And then when the rest of this comes out, the thing that makes me really believe this is, the things that makes me believe this part of the story is that I think that anonymously, some of the players in that locker room, had AB been well within his right with the decisions that he's made, they would have come out anonymously and said something. The fact that they've come out anonymously and kind of confirmed the reports of the blow up at halftime is the damning part of this to AB for me.
And I don't even that, okay, so you know we had this conversation the day that this happened. And what you just said was you felt compassion, right?
Yeah.
So I said to you in the moments after it happened, how heavy I felt.
Yeah.
Like never before have I felt that heavy about somebody I don't personally know. And I said, I don't know, I feel like I need to do something. And you suggested DM him.
Yeah, reach out to him.
Reach out to him. So that's what I did. Because at the end of the day, regardless of what the actions on the field came from, whatever string of events led up to that happening, what happened, I said it was unprofessional, and it was, but it was also very telling of something deeper than what was happening on that field, in my mind, deeper than what was happening on the field. There is, And I've said this every single time we talk about this man. I'd be mad at him for some of the stuff he does and be like, why are you acting? What are we doing? But at the end of the day, the one consistent thing I've said is he needs help.
Right.
And I'm going to continue to stand by that, that he needs help.
Right.
Every time I look at him, it reminds me of Brandon Marshall before going to get help.
Right.
It makes me full just thinking about this. And so when I was working with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, one of the things that they always said was, there may be players who feel more comfortable coming to you as a coach first, because you don't have psychiatrists or psychologists or therapist or counselor behind, you know what I mean? That they'll feel more comfortable just because you're a coach. They might feel more comfortable coming to you first. And so the reason I reached out to him was for that point, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't want to deal with that stigma that right now, right? And you just need somebody to kind of help you navigate where you are and get to a place where that is maybe the decision that you make, that you get the help you need, I would be willing to be that person.
Yeah.
And I was dead serious. Like, and I told you, and when you sent me the tweet, I said, should I send something this way? And you were like, why not? And so I went and I fixed, because my DM didn't was much longer than the tweet. But the tweet I sent, I kind of had to stay within the parameters of what you have to in order to send one. And the responses from people were, the trolling was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I never responded to any of those people because I know where my heart was.
Right.
When I said what I said and I meant what I meant.
Right.
I'm not going to judge a man based on his actions when I feel and I know in my heart and my spirit that something is wrong. How do I judge that?
Right.
How do I put myself in this place that I'm perfect when I'm not? So for all of those people who were, you know, having something to say like, oh, we're not assuming anything. You're assuming because you don't know the whole story. First of all, we don't know exactly what happened. And second of all, we don't know what's going on with him.
Right, we're all speculating based on the information.
Not the football player, the person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to stand by what I say.
And that's why, like, it don't even make sense for you to respond to them because most of those people who were responding to you or tweeting to you or anything like that only care about Antonio Brown, the football player, and not the man. And so,
absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. And I just really was so. For me personally, watching this it's funny the way that I put it in our notes, right? Is it a money dispute, injury, or a cry for help?
Yeah.
He may not know it. He may not understand it. Right. But I see it as a cry.
And that's why I encourage you to reach out to him because he may not respond. You know what I'm saying? It just may be the seed that needs to be planted for him to say, even if it's 2-3 years from now,
yeah,
maybe I do need to get some help.
Yeah, for sure. And it don't have to be me. I don't care. That was the other thing that was kind of the undertone of a lot of the responses was that because he rich, of course you want to help him. Like, make sure you get your money up front.
And that's why none of them know you and they don't know what you do. You know what I'm saying? Or what you have done with athletes. And so that's why stuff like that is like, you want to fight against all of this stuff that they're saying. And you know what I'm saying? But it's like at a certain point, they don't know who you are.
They don't know. That's what I said. I'll let y'all have that because you don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was not offended at all. I was just like, y'all funny.
Yeah.
Like, this ain't got nothing to do with that man's money. Anyway,
but that's the thing. For someone to say that about you means that they don't know who you are. So,
yeah. So I will say this on our podcast again, Antonio Brown, mm-hmm. I am here. If you need someone to, I know you say you got a good, I read something where he said he feels like he has a good support system around him, and that may or may not be true. It may be good for you because they go along with you. I'm not saying that's what the case is, but that may be why it feels good to you. Sometimes you need somebody who's not going to just go along to get along, somebody who's going to tell you the truth. And if anybody knows me, they know I don't know how to do nothing else.
Right.
So I would carefully, compassionately, and lovingly be a person that you can trust and depend on to help you to do what you need to do to get yourself in a better space. Just because I can't even, like, I think why I felt so heavy is I feel his turmoil internally. There is internal turmoil that he doesn't even talk about, that he doesn't feel comfortable saying to anybody. He wants to put on the facade and be, it's the face for me. Like, it, immediately every tweet you showing is you smiling and hanging out. Anyway, I'm sorry. Whoo, yeah, I'm gonna let that go. Anyway, that's just my 2 cents on that. So if you can see, feel, understand that it's genuine coming from me and you reach out, please do. We'll give you the contact information at the end of the show. You can hit me up any one of those ways you want to. I reached out to you on Twitter and IG. You can hit me up either one of those places as well. The Advantage Coach, that was me. So yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. So anyway, let's keep it moving.
Yeah.
South Carolina women's basketball. This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Alabama football gets this sauce. But
I was about to say that right there was the thing that we said when we first saw this. When I first saw it and I like hit you up about it.
Yeah.
You was like, yeah, this is some Alabama football type stuff.
Yeah, this is some Alabama football sauce right here. I don't understand this. Tell us about this.
And then my response to you was, oh yeah, this is very SEC like. No, but so last week, South Carolina women's basketball team was upset by 1 point against Missouri's women's basketball team. And something very peculiar happened when because each week the teams get ranked and they get re-ranked and repositioned based off of wins and losses and stuff like that. So when it was time for the reshuffling to happen, South Carolina women's basketball remained at the top of the poll to everyone's, depending on what side you want, either delight or dismay. And so when I saw this, I hit you up immediately as soon as I saw it, because we had talked about it last week.
Yep.
I just was floored at the fact that this could happen.
I don't understand it.
But what I would say is that they're probably the best team. The best Absolutely. Team in women's basketball. But I think that they should have the opportunity to continue to prove it. Now, if they win next week and they blow someone out or something like that, then we stick them right back at number right. one.
Exactly.
But I just didn't understand why they remained at number one.
Yeah. Because if they could do that, then Georgia should have stayed number one in football. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Anyway, this is weird to me. Because I remember times when they were on the decline, at least, because when they were at the top, nobody could beat them. But with UConn.
Yes.
Man, you lose a game, you go to like number 3 automatically.
Mm-hmm.
not even number two, like number three. And I'm like, well, why? And to your point, they were always the best team.
Mm-hmm.
So what sauce are we cooking with this? I don't understand this one. I know it was a point, and maybe that's why it wasn't, because it wasn't a blowout or it wasn't a significant loss, but it was an L either way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That was kind of weird. That one's weird to me. I think they played last night, didn't they?
Did they?
I thought they played last night. I thought I saw something about them last night. But just weird. Again, we had this conversation about this, about how they determine these rankings anyway. It's kind of funky and all of that to me. It's just weird.
Yeah.
In every sport, I totally don't get how they come up with how they determine these rankings anyway. So,
I was going to check to see if UConn had ever lost the game and remained number one. And I don't see anything that's kind of prevalent based off.
No, I know it didn't happen, because every time they lost, they went to like number three. Like that started, let's see, maybe about 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
where they started like really just falling off a little bit. And so, they have had a hard time getting even, so this is weird. This is some weird sauce. Whatever y'all doing, how y'all coming up with this stuff, this is weird. Yeah,
I think it's some SEC stuff.
This is not SEC. That's the one thing school. You can't say about basketball. It ain't got nothing to do with the conference.
So SEC, their teams, because if I'm not mistaken, Baylor's number one right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, Baylor's not SEC, though. That's the Big 12. Right. Yeah, okay. All right. So my whole argument is.
Yeah.
No, but.
Well, so, I was waiting. I'm like, what you saying? Wait,
Kentucky is up there now.
What is that? The Baylor's number one? That doesn't. Anyway.
No. But I'm talking about the top 25 teams in college basketball. I was trying to go see South Carolina if they played last night, and
if they played last night.
Man, Maryland lost to Illinois. Okay, that's not what I'm supposed to be looking. I can't. Why women's basketball isn't like so? We gotta do something about this.
Listen, don't start.
I can't just run to look to see
because it's not relevant.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's what they feel. It's not relevant.
This is a bit curious. We'll see at the end of the season if this is one of those things where it's like, okay, we need to revisit this, because if South Carolina doesn't win the championship, then this would appear to be some sort of a bias. And while it already looks like that, like
like it sort of appears. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's some PC. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll just see. We'll keep an eye on this one for y'all and just see what happens. It's just weird. So anyway, Kyrie Irving's back. Came back Wednesday against the Pacers.
Mm-hmm.
22 points, I believe.
22 points.
Good return, but what do you think?
I think that the NBA just, not the NBA, the Nets, because of their positioning, was forced to acquiesce to.
Yes, big word, Jared.
Huh?
Yes, big word, Jared.
Oh no. I feel like you can't say that if I used that one before.
Oh yes, I can. No, that does not make it not a big word. Go ahead.
I feel like they were forced to acquiesce to Kyrie Irving's position.
Yeah.
And it's kind of going to be hard to do anything with him at that point, right?
Giving in.
And so while it did help them win a game, if, and I can't remember who made this point, if they end up a top four seed, if they end up a top four seed, if they end up like one or two, they're not going to have them for their home games. So they're going to need to be a number five seed
to have to play on the
for them to give him a chance to actually play in at least four of the games.
Assuming you play a team where it's not a city where he can't play.
This is true. Well, all of the playoff games in the East, because it's the Western teams with the cities that other than New York that are allowed, you know.
This is true. So it would be beyond that first round, basically.
Right.
Well, it would be, I mean, beyond the, it would have to be the championship.
Right.
They made it to the championship, then it'd be an issue. Yeah.
And so if they like played Golden State, then they just be short.
It's their fault. So it is what it is. I don't feel bad one way or the other. Like, this is your choice. And the thing that keeps coming to my mind about this is, why is this, I guess the NBA's take on it is different because they're inside. I guess it's because they're inside. Because in my head, I thought, how is this any different than Aaron Rodgers?
Well, so.
It's because they're inside. It's in a different state. But still, he can go to New York and play, but it's outside.
Oh, yeah.
That's why. That's the point I was trying to. I was.
Well, that's what makes it so idiotic that Aaron Rodgers would be intentionally deceptive the way that he was, because it's not even a rule that you have to have the vaccine in the NFL.
He just didn't want to get tested all the time. The testing was an inconvenience, I think, in his, you know, I love Aaron, but I'm mad at him about this. Yeah. I still love him, but my crush on him goes nowhere.
Don't go nowhere.
but I feel like it's no different, but that's what it is. It's because he can play outside. Because I was like, why is this such a big deal when Aaron Rodgers is the same? I mean, plenty of them, not just Aaron Rodgers. It's just that he happens to be a big name in the NFL who's clearly not vaccinated, right? So it's like, what is the big deal? But I feel like they get what they get. Whatever ends up happening, it is what it is. Just the decision y'all made. You've put yourself at his mercy at this point, and you just deal with whatever. Whatever it is. And you put yourself at the mercy of having him be a part. I mean, it's not fair to, I can't think of his name right now. Steve. It's not fair to Steve to have to game plan for two different scenarios.
That's true.
That part I don't like. Because for when you are playing out west or at home, you got to have a whole different game plan.
Right.
And then what about the people who feel, okay, that's a whole nother conversation. We're not going there. The same thing I feel about the whole Aaron Rodgers thing and whoever else, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Don't breathe on me. That's all I'm going to say. That's just how I feel. But that's me, because I'm a germaphobe. So don't breathe on me.
Yeah.
All right. On to my favorite part.
What's that?
Real wrong call. we will topic our opinion, keep it moving.
All right.
So this first one, I saw this during the game. I was watching the game as it was occurring, and the commentators shared this story that Marcus Freeman had shared with them. And basically, Marcus Freeman is now the head coach of Notre Dame. Awesome opportunity for him. I'm excited for him. Young Black man, go do you. You know what I'm saying? It's a new era in Notre Dame. Started in a bowl game for him. Like, your first experience as the Notre Dame head coach is at a bowl game. And so they were sharing that his father, who's former military, so thank you for your service, sir, was not at the game, but instead chose to watch from his sofa because in his mind, his son being the head coach of Notre Dame was not a big deal.
So I guess I would have to hear the context in the way that he said it. Maybe he is not trying to make a big deal out of it because, like, oh, I expect greatness from my son, so this is like a drop in the bucket. Or, like, it's not a big deal to me. I don't really care about it.
Well, they said he was like, I'm going to watch it from my chair in my house like I would any other game.
Okay.
And for me, regardless of, I appreciate if he has high expectations for his son, so this is not a big deal for him. I hope that is exactly, and I feel like in my spirit, that's really what it's about. Like, right. I'm not going to make a big deal out of this because what else would I expect from you, sir?
Right.
But whether he was the head coach or an assistant coach or a grad assistant or as a parent, not a parent, you're a parent, so you can tell. But if I were a parent, I'm going to support my child. I'm not going to make it, I guess my point being, I would have been there regardless because I would have been supportive of him as my son, not as head coach. And I would have been supporting him from before he became head coach. Right. So I guess that's my problem with it. Like, because it feels like regardless of what your intention was, you're minimalizing the accomplishments from being an assistant coach all the way through now of your son.
So first, let me say that as a father, I would have gone just because I view that as support.
That's it for me.
But what if his father doesn't view him being at the game as support?
How do you not do that?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't register. It's a commercial with a robot on TV. This is the human error. That doesn't register for me. There's human error because it doesn't register for me. Why?
Why
is it not support?
I would need to know the story a little more intimately to really understand. And so if he feels like for me being at the game is not the way that I show support or I can show support in some other way, then I would need to hear that to understand. Instead of hearing this and saying, you're not supporting your son.
That's why
I preface that by saying that I view being there as being support. So as a father, I would have gone to support my son in that way.
I don't know how you match, but anyway, neither here nor there. He seemed not fazed by it at all. This is his dad. I think whatever their relationship is, they talked about how he talks about how he respects him and how he loves him and admires his dad. And so for them, this just may be their thing. It just left a taste in my mouth because I said, what?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's not about him being the head coach of Notre Dame. It's about him being your son. Anyway, not judging, just saying my own personal opinion, I would not been able to do this. So, all right, next story. T.O. throwing his hat in the game, y'all, to replace A.B. for the Bucks. He said he knows he is in good enough shape. They would only need him for possibly 3 to 4 games. And he has enough juice in the tank to get him all he got for those 3 to 4 games. I thought it was a good argument.
He's what, 48 years old now?
Mm-hmm.
Now there's one. There's one part of me that says, I mean, well, y'all letting Tom Brady play deep into his 40s. Why can't T.O. have an opportunity? And then there's this other part of me that says, it's a no for me, dog. Oh, wow. Just remain retired. You're 48. You're almost 50. And you haven't played in 10 years.
That's the part.
The game looks a little different. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I feel like it's 10 years probably ago. In shape like any other people who are playing now. I don't know if you've seen some of these videos of him working out,
mm-hmm.
and him even competing against some of the people who actually play right now.
Mm-hmm.
He don't look too bad. It ain't too shabby.
No. I believe he's probably in tip-top shape. Football shape is a totally different shape. Okay. And the thing is when you get out there and you're actually competing during the game, there's something different that it requires of your body that looks a lot different than it does than just doing drills. And, you know, there are a lot of people who could get out there and, like, do that. And I'm not saying that they would look like T.O. does, because he's a specimen. At 50 years old, like, he looks amazing.
Bro.
But that football shape is a different shape.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know, so I'll give you that one, because I don't know. Have no clue.
I like to see him do it, though.
I'm sorry. That's how I feel about it. Dude, go show them little young bucks what somebody that's 50 can do. Like, I'm with it.
Yeah, but I don't want him to go out there and do something.
I don't want him to get hurt.
Yeah.
That's the part I don't want.
Right. Because
10 years out of the game is a long time.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. And we watched even for, I think it was only a year out watching Dez Bryant come back. And it was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. As soon as he came back, ruptured Achilles.
Ooh, I was like, oh. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know about that one. All right. Jason Kidd. So, this is funny. So, first of all, I love Dirk Nowitzki. Let's say
yes.
And his number was retired last week. And even a statue of him was presented. And it was pretty cool. It was his signature fallback move. During this whole celebration, when it was Jason Kidd's turn to talk, he shot his shot. Mm-hmm. And that's Dirk. He wanted a 10-day contract. Come back and play.
Oh, man. Dirk with Luka?
Psycho. Psycho, okay? Yeah. That would be psycho.
That would, okay, let me bring it all the way around. Dirk with Luka with Porzingis?
I was going to say Porzingis, yes.
Yeah.
Nobody.
I'd love to see
that. Him. Like, nobody would be able to do, what do you do with that? That's a three right there.
Now. All 7-footers.
That's a better three. Well, that's a top three, mm-hmm. like the Celtics three.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be ugly, especially really if he's still in shape to play. Mm-hmm. Let's be clear, Dirk was never an athlete. He slowly mumbled down the floor, did what he did, and was slowly mumbled back the other way. So it was not like he needed to be a speedster. So I'm sure he could probably still get out there and do what he did, because the shot was sweet.
Yeah.
So that would have been cool to see.
Yeah.
But I think he politely said no.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Wife was looking at him like, bruh, no. That's not what we're doing these days. So so this story, this next one,
mm-hmm.
we've had conversations about refs before,
mm-hmm.
and their emotion, getting in their feelings about stuff. This, I feel like, is one of those situations where you were just in your feelings about some stuff. Yeah. So Kyle Lowry was ejected after his second technical in the game when they played. Oh my God, who did they play? Can't remember. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can't remember you.
Because they got into, I'm going to give them a little pre to this. Mm-hmm. There was, so he had a technical before. There was a fight that took place.
Right.
So it was a little testy. Mm-hmm. It was a testy game. But all he did to get his second technical mm-hmm. was toss the ball underhanded to the ref. Not even hard. It was not even rude. It was literally one of them. The ball came to me. I just kind of tossed it over, and he got a technical foul for it and was ejected from the game. Is this foul? Are we calling foul on this ref?
Yeah, of course. And we've seen this with NFL referees. And first of all, I don't know how they do it in the NBA, but the NFL, you need to make your referees full-time employees. That's one.
Yeah.
NBA. And it seems like a thing that's happening in all industries around sports is that the people who are not directly related to sport are trying to become superstars. Mm. So now that we have superstar media members who can go and demand the same salaries as, you know, professional sports players. Now we have referees who want to become superstars and who want their names to be out there for being super testy and super sensitive.
Okay, I'm glad I didn't say what just came to my head. Okay, well.
I know what it was, though. Oh, man.
Okay, well. Yeah, no, this was foul. I thought this was very foul. Like even the commentators were like, wait, what just happened? Mm-hmm. Like they were even like, why would you kick him out over? He didn't even, it wasn't nasty. I promise y'all, unless he said something that we didn't hear, which we would know, I was lost. It was Yeah. Anyway, I'm gonna keep my mouth closed because I was about to say something else. So yes, that was foul, definitely foul.
Yeah,
for sure. All right, so now we're having on to the real. We haven't had one of these. Mm-hmm. Did we have one last week? I can't remember. Or did we do?
Yeah, we had one to the real.
On to the real last week. Yeah. That's right, we did. So this is somebody that a lot of people know.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like it was important to highlight him, one, because he's done so much, but two, I respect this dude because he stepped up to the plate with this whole AB thing and mm-hmm. kind of stood his ground to say, I'm not going to be a part of this judging him thing.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that mm-hmm. so much because he could honestly have a lot at stake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Coming and standing against what the status quo says, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciated his stance. And so that kind of put him in the radar to say, you know what? Let's highlight him. Yeah. And of course, I'm talking about Michael Strahan.
Yes.
Former New York Giant.
Mm-hmm. Played his entire career with the Giants. Played his entire career with the Giants and is currently... Or still, not currently, but he's still the sack leader for sacks in the season.
Okay. 15 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a dominant career as a mm-hmm. dominant pass rusher in that whole time. Like he really brought some of the ones that you even still see now, like Jason Pierre-Paul, like those mm-hmm. people came up
under him.
Like they came, yeah. So.
Won two Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady both times.
Yes. Gotta love that.
Yes. Oh, no. I'm sorry.
He beat Tom Brady and
he beat Tom Brady once.
That was his last season.
That he didn't play in the 2012 Super Bowl.
No, it was 2007 was his last season. Mm-hmm. So he beat Tom Brady. But since we retired from football, let's just say he's reinvented himself. That's why he's our onto the real. Him and Steve Harvey, they the hardest working black men in Hollywood, in my mind. Because every time you turn around, he's on something. So, of course, he does sports commentation. He's one of the personalities you see on Fox for sports. But on top of that, he is one of the co-hosts for Good Morning America. Mm-hmm. And he hosts one or two different, maybe I know of one, maybe two game shows.
Mm-hmm.
So, just all around good dude. Love his personality. Think he is probably one of the I don't want to say that. I'm not going to say that. I'll just say this. His personality has made him safe.
Yeah.
To people. I'll say it like that. Because he's a big assuming dude.
Yeah.
But they don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
It's his personality that shines bigger than his body, like bigger than his stature is his personality and his famous gap that he still pretty much so embraces. So I just love this dude, and I'm sure he has a clothing line as well. Because he outfits the Jackson State University football team. So again, like I said, him and Steve Harvey neck and neck in this thing. So he's definitely that's to be able to dominate in one arena and then pivot and change and dominate in another arena the way that he has is pretty impressive.
That's the definition really of on to the real.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
And so shout out to him. He's one of my favorite players of all time.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah. All right. So we got a couple of they're similar, we'll say. Our feel good final thought.
Mm-hmm.
So we just decided to include them together. And both stories are about the kindness of the organization or players and seeing, and what I'll say is this, seeing the ordinary everyday person.
Mm-hmm.
So the other part of this is, again, somebody, an NFL player, seeing somebody and appreciating who they are.
Yeah.
So Zach Wilson and I think a couple of other players were out eating breakfast, I believe it was, at a local restaurant in New York somewhere, small little diner kind of place. And their waitress happened to mention, when she figured out who he was, she was a little awestruck. And she told him how much her son love the Jets and loves him. And so, you know, she went on doing what she did. She just shared that and kept it moving, not looking, you know, for anything. And as he got ready to leave the restaurant, he called her over and he told her that he was going to give, he walked over to her and told her, I'm giving you tickets to the game that Sunday that was coming up. And she was like, wait, what? He was like, yeah, I'm going to make sure you and your sons have tickets to the game. And she was just floored. And even her coworkers knew about how much her sons love the Jets. And so they were excited for her that she met him, first of all, and took pictures with him because he took pictures with her and all kind of stuff. She was like, I need to call my son right now. Like, it was so cool. So Shout out to him too for just seeing her.
Yeah.
And appreciating her appreciation of him in the scene.
Yeah. Shout out to him. He looks like he's going to be a rock star in New York for at least for at least a few years.
Yeah, they're finally getting a groove together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see it. Even the way they played Tampa Bay, tough. Mm-hmm. To the very end,
They've been playing like this for a few weeks now. Yeah. So it's something that I hope kind of translates. Because I remember the years, and this was pre. What's the head coach who they got him from? He has a twin brother, defensive coach. Twin brother, they got him from the Ravens.
Rob brother, you talking about Rob? No.
Yeah, no, but the brother.
The long. No,
hair. Yeah, the brother has the long hair. He's still coaching. The other brother is on ESPN in the morning.
Yes, I know who you're talking. Why can't?
Yeah, I cannot think of his name.
His name is Rob something.
Yeah.
I can't think of what it is right now. Why can't I think of? He was the Bills coach. The Bills coach.
Rex Ryan.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rex Ryan. Bills coach. Rob Ryan, that's his name. Yep.
And I was going to say pre Rex Ryan, back when in the late 90s when the Jets were pretty good. I remember those teams, and I just remember kind of, you know, the Giants for most New Yorkers have been like the primary team, but then you've had some players or some people be fan of the Jets, and when the Jets were doing pretty good, you could see, like, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Lakers and Clippers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a year in there. Yes, it's just like that.
Yep.
There was a year in there where people were hoping that to have a Giants-Jets Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I believe it's when the Ravens went and beat, I want to say it's that year when the Ravens beat the Giants in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
But hopefully this is them on their way back.
Yes, that'd be awesome. I would love to see it. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
The Giants sure ain't doing nothing and they done get it anyway. So yeah, go ahead, do what you want.
Yes.
All right. So show picks.
Yes.
You watching.
The harder they fall. When I tell you, I was, and this is how much of a nerd I am. When I wasn't familiar with like the movie and the storyline of it at all or anything like that. But when I saw that one of the characters in the movie was Bass Reeves, mm-hmm. who was an actual person in history, he was, mm-hmm. You know, because this story was part fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But they use, I guess, some real life characters in it. I got super excited because I remember reading the book to Jack and telling him about the story of Bass Reeves. So I got all super hyped with it.
Oh, such a nerd. I love it.
But okay. Yeah, so The Heart of They Fall, good movie. Good movie if you haven't seen it.
Okay. I said I wanted to watch it. Some stuff I have to prepare myself for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I said I wanted to watch it though.
Yeah.
So for me, it was Bruised.
Mm-hmm.
Again, something I had to prepare myself
for. I was about to say, I think I got to prepare myself for that.
But Halle Berry did her thing.
Did she?
Which I was not expecting because this is not typical for her. She played a former MMA fighter who was going back into the ring. So
I had to prepare myself for that one too.
I did. I'm not gonna lie. I had to prepare myself. Like Halle Berry, MMA. Like,
yeah, that's why.
What are we doing? Like, huh? But she, it really was. It was a good story, I will say.
Okay.
It was a good story. I wondered if it was true because I was like, man, they did such a good job of the story itself. It wasn't even about her fighting or any of that that was impressive. It was the story.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been watching quite a few things. as in this recovery stage, but yeah. So, all right. Well, we're at the end of another one, at the end of 143.
Yes, 143.
And so I will attempt to do this week since you won't be here next week. I might want to try for the first time. Okay. So we would love to hear from you all. We appreciate you all always rocking with us. So if you have anything, any comments, you want to participate in the show, anything like that, hit us up. So I'll give you the ways to hit us up. Email feel2therealpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter, feel2therealp1. IG is @feel2therealpodcast. Facebook is just what you see behind me, Feel to the Real Podcast. And the same with YouTube, Feel to the Real Podcast. So those are the ways that you can reach out to us. We please go share, like, subscribe to our YouTube page. If you go to our Facebook page, you will get everything that comes to our YouTube page. You'll get the notification, so you'll know when new content is put out. And again, tell us who's really right before Monday this week of who will win. And yeah, I guess that's it. That's brother. It. Thank you for getting me ready.
Oh, you listen.
Scary. Not having you is going to be scary.
Yeah.
I'll miss you. But I'm excited about the why.
Yeah.
And yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, I'm about to say, you act like you ain't going to talk to me in 6 weeks.
Oh, no. You can listen. I'm gonna be getting plenty of pics.
I'm about to say, yeah, you're gonna get a whole bunch of pics and updates and all that.
And all kind of stuff. So, no, that's right. Not what I'm saying. We just won't be doing this together.
Right. True. So, and after like you were, because you were gone for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Like when the episode you came back, it was like, man, like,
yeah.
It felt good.
Yeah. So here we are.
I understand.
Yeah, coming to this fork in the road as you go and do daddy duties, and I'm gonna go and keep us rocking.
Yes.
Next week I'm excited. Our first guest is somebody that Jared and I both know very well.
Yes, yes.
Awesome person. So you all just stay tuned. I'll be putting some things out. You'll probably see it on our IG or any of our social media probably. As we get closer to next week and having our first special guest co-host with me. So I think that's it.
Yeah.
All right.
We out.
Peace.
Now put the cameras on me, 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 put the cameras on me.